You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week. Welcome to the show that aims to encourage and support Christians who lead. From time to time, you may have seen someone preaching on the streets, perhaps using just a microphone, perhaps also a sketchboard. But it's maybe less common to see worship on the streets. But today's guest believes he had a clear vision from God to raise up groups of worshippers to take the sound of heaven to the high streets of our towns and cities. His name is Aaron Shah, and he's a songwriter, poet, artist and coach who currently leads weekly times of worship on the streets of Sheffield city centre. And via the Worship on the Streets Hub, he connects, encourages and equips street worshippers around the UK, facilitates national days of street worship and runs Worship on the Streets tours. So lovely to welcome you, Aaron, to the Leadership Show.
Thanks, Andy. It's really good to be here.
Now, occasionally I will interview a leader who has a vision for what they believe God wants them to do. I understand you literally had a vision.
That's right. Yeah. So in 2014, my wife and I were just leaving Indonesia. We'd spent a year and a half living there. I'd been volunteering with a Christian school out there. And so we're in this time of transition. And obviously, so the question was, what's next, God? We knew my wife was going to be studying in Durham University. But for me, I didn't have a job to go back to. So I was praying, God, what have you got in store for me back home? And where we were in Indonesia was quite rural. So it actually took a number of days to get back to the UK. And along the way, we stopped off at various points to see friends. And on one of the villages where we stopped off, I went for a rest, just to have a break from all the traveling and the socializing, just went down to have a lie down. And again, my mind began to wonder, God, what are you going to store for me back home? And he answered in a really clear way with, yeah, as I say, probably what I would call as an open vision. It was like a dream, but I was very much awake. And I saw this scene unfold in front of my eyes, like a small TV screen in front of me. And in that scene, my wife and I were in a church service. So imagine like a mega church, maybe like Bethel or Hillsong, a couple of thousand people in one room, all worshiping God. And it was just a powerful time of worship. People were experiencing God's love through the music. They were experiencing his healing, his deliverance. Everyone was getting caught up in the worship. And then suddenly the sound disappeared for Rachel and I. It was as if we could hear nothing. The band was still playing. People were still singing around us, but we couldn't hear anything. And in that silence, we heard two questions being asked to us. The first one was, what about the people who can't afford this? And the second one was, what about the people who don't know about this? And it was one of those times where someone asked a question, but you kind of know the answer. And we looked at each other and we knew we had to respond. And so we pushed through the congregation to the front of the room and we jumped up onto the stage and we ran to the side of the stage because we saw a door there. And we opened up the door and people from the street started running in onto the stage. There were like business people, there were homeless people, drug addicts, all sorts of people from all walks of life running in from the streets onto the stage. And then they got caught up in the worship as well and again started experiencing God's love, his healing and his deliverance. And then it finished and that was the end of it. So I'd never experienced anything like that before. And to this day, I still haven't experienced anything like that before, but it was the start of what became Worship on the Streets.
Wow, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And obviously the answer to the question about affording presumably was to do with conferences have a charge to them and that excludes those who are financially less able.
That's exactly right, yeah. So I think, I totally understand that things cost money to put on a big conference to bring people in from different parts of the world for travel expenses and things like that. But I think there was this challenge of what obstacles are we putting in place for people to actually experience God's power and his presence to worship. And some of that is financial obstacles and some of it's just we don't invite them into these spaces or just maybe some people don't want to go into churches for whatever reason. So there's something about how do we make worship accessible to people outside of the church?
Sure. And your vision, of course, was people coming into a church. You've interpreted it as you needing to go out to them.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So that was, I guess, the first step of God's kind of revealing what he's got in store for me. And it wasn't very much a full picture. It was about accessibility. So I held on to that. And then, as I say, we were moving back to the UK. We ended up moving to the Northeast because Rachel was studying at Durham University. The next step for me was I felt God say to connect with the right people and he will show me what he wants me to do. So I just went online, looked around for Christians who are involved in worship, whether it's churches or different ministries. And I came across a ministry called Burn 24/7. It's a global worship ministry that have communities all around the world. In the UK, it's now changed its name to Worship 24/7, but it was Burn back then. So I emailed the leader and I just said, look, we're moving to this area. I feel like God's got something about worship in store for me. Could I just come to your next event and just see what you're doing? And he was really welcoming. He said, yeah, come along, gave me the date and times. I went there. I expected it to be in a church building, but it was actually in this guy's home. And there was 10 people in his living room, all just worshiping God. There was kind of guitars and pianos laying around and just very much spontaneous flow of people picking up different instruments and worshiping at different times. Really enjoyed the time there. And then in one of the breaks, he said to me, just so you know, we're going to carry on worshiping here. And then in a couple of hours, we're going to go down to the high street and worship out there. And in all honesty, Andy, my reaction was thank you, but no thank you. I'd not seen anyone do that before. It just didn't click to me. I was just like, oh, that sounds a bit, I'm going to be honest, it's cringy. I was like, this is, yeah, a bit out of my comfort zone. So I wrestled with it a little bit and I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll be kind and I'll go and help them set up their equipment and then I'll go home. They're going to be very welcoming to me, but so I want to kind of pay that back a little bit. So the time came, we went down to the high street and I helped them set up. And then there was something inside of me that said, well, why don't you just stick around a little bit longer, see what they're actually going to do? So I thought, again, I'll stick around for maybe half an hour now, just yeah, to check it out. Well, that's half an hour turned into 4 hours and I was actually one of the last people to leave. What I saw happening was people were taking in turns to lead worship, but this time out in the middle of Durham Market Square, was that people were stopping by who were, you know, they were maybe doing some shopping. It was a Friday night, I think they were going out for drinks and things, but people were stopping and listening to the worship. And there were people on our team who were there to pray for people and share the gospel. And people were engaging with it. And it was like the music was drawing them into this space. I was fascinated by it, I think. And then the very last thing that happened was a guy called KM Roy, he stepped up to the mic to lead the last slot of worship. And as he was leading, God spoke to me really clearly and he said, Aaron, that's what I want you to do. And again, I was a bit like, oh, okay, wasn't expecting this. Again, my first reaction, God, this isn't a job. I'm looking for a job. I don't know what this is. I don't have an understanding. And I'm not sure I can tell people that this is my job. But I had that conviction it was from God. So I went back home to Rachel and said, I think this is what God wants me to do. She was really faithful and encouraging. And she was just like, well, God's leading you so far. Let's just hold on to it and just, you know, see where this leads. So I said to God, I was like, I think you're speaking. I've had this vision in Indonesia and I've had this experience with these guys in Durham. If this really is you, God, I need to see you in scriptures. Because I, by that point, I've been a Christian for maybe 12 years. And I'd never seen it in scriptures, this idea of kind of marrying worship and evangelism together. So I said, God, I'll only do it if I see it in your word. So for a few weeks, started reading the scriptures. God, where is this? Where is this? And then I came across Psalm 40. And in verse 3, it says, he put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. And it was like the light bulb went on. That was the time I thought, this is it. There's the worship, you know, the new song, the hymn of praise. And then he says, many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. And that's the evangelism, the two of those coming together. So that was me all in. I said yes to Jesus and haven't looked back since.
Well, bless you. Well, we can talk about the courage that you exhibited in doing that, because as you said, this wasn't a natural thing for you temperamentally or in terms of your disposition. I introduced you as a musician, as a poet. So, at what point did your musical interest kind of was that kindled? What was your musical background and your musical taste?
Yeah, so as a child, I didn't grow up as a Christian. My mum was a Christian when I was younger, but for me, it was never a big part of my life, and I wasn't that interested. But music was from an early years, particularly from my dad's influence, actually. He loved people like Cat Stevens, the Eagles, those kind of musicians. And so I used to listen to a lot of his records. There were some of my happiest experiences, particularly Cat Stevens, listening to my dad's vinyls. But it wasn't until I was about 13 that I really that music really gripped my heart, and that was when I discovered the band Nirvana. So as a lot of people know about Nirvana, but just for those who don't, they're three American, at that point, early 20-year-olds, and kind of grown. They were the forerunners, if you like, of grunge music. That they became the figureheads of that movement from Seattle. And I love their music. There's something raw about their music. They're really honest, quite punky, quite edgy. And when I listened to them, they were the first musicians who've made me feel like I want to play music, not just listen to it. And I want to create music. And I think partly because their music is quite simple in many ways. It's quite three or four chords, very easy to play. So I quickly picked up their songs. But I used to spend a lot of time listening to, back then it was tapes, and then recording alongside those listening to the tapes. I used to kind of sing along and record myself singing so I could learn how to sing. And just spent hours listening to their music and writing my own songs as well. And I think what it was about them was the music. There was definitely that side of things. I loved how, just how it made me feel, and just I could connect with the lyrics. But I also became a student of them because I saw the impact they were having around the world. And it kind of surprised me that these young 20-year-olds, three guys who, weren't musically trained, they kind of came out of nowhere. And yet their music exploded all around the world. There was something about the sound, the lyrics that were connecting with particularly teenagers at that time, from different cultures, but they had this global impact. And I just remember thinking, well, this is the power of music. There's something about music itself that has this power to grip people's hearts, and not just individuals, but also shape culture. So again, at that time, movies started getting made around this grunge scene. Fashion changed. I started wearing ripped jeans and growing my hair long, and check shirts, all that kind of stuff. And millions of people were doing that around the world. There was something about this music and this sound that impacted culture. And to be honest, I think that's be became a big part of my Christian journey when I eventually became a Christian at university. I was 21. And it changed my life meeting Jesus. But when I started thinking about music, I was like, well, God, I've seen what non-Christians can do with music and the impact that they can have all around the world and how much they shape lives and shape culture. God, you're the creator of music. You're the creator of this world. What can you do with music and in the hands of people who just say yes to you and wants to see their music being used by God? So that became my prayer. And in many ways, I think Worship on the Streets is part of his answer to that.
Well, Aaron, it'd be good to just talk about the practicalities of this as people are listening. They're trying to imagine their own town centre or city centre, perhaps, and what it would look like. Talk me through, first of all, in terms of getting permission, and what's good practice, perhaps, and what's bad practice in this whole area.
I'll start by saying it's really easy to get out there and to do street worship wherever you are. Let's say in terms of licenses, there are only two places I know of in the UK where you need a license. That's around London and in Oxford as well. So if you're going out to do music, you need to get permissions from the council to go and do that. Other than that, anywhere in the UK, you can go out without a license. So my advice is always to first look at the busking guidelines in your local town or city centre. Most places will have them, and again, they flesh out what good practice is. We would very much fall under the busking culture, if you like, from a council's point of view. And then what it looks like, I think one of the things I love about street worship is that it looks like different things with different people. So for me, it looks like I have a guitar and I have a mic, and I lead kind of contemporary Christian worship songs. I've got friends who are DJs, and they go out there and do it. I've recently connected with a dancer, and she goes and dances out on the streets. I've got a friend who doesn't play any musical instruments, so she stands with a phone and connects her phone up to an amplifier and again sings through a mic as well. So it looks like different things for different people. In terms of good practice, we always say just be mindful of other people around you. There are big issue sellers who are trying to make a living out there on the streets. There are people who are trying to raise money for charities. There are shop owners who, want to have their doors open so to welcome customers in. So don't position yourself around these people where it might affect their business or it might affect where they're working. When you think about things like not blocking walkways, again, we want people to be to receive what we're doing in a positive way. So don't make it hard for people to, get around the shops and things like that. But really it takes a yes to Jesus and then just thinking practically, what do I want this to look like? What gifting have I got? What skills can I bring to this? And then going out and doing it. I would say it's great to have people with you as well, as much as possible, just to have that sense of community out on the streets so you're not alone out there when you're doing it.
Certainly, in open air preaching, I understand teams will often go out and some will listen to the preaching as if they're bystanders just to create the crowd, because that obviously helps the whole thing. And in terms of the kind of music that you might choose to use, obviously lyrics and style of music will be a factor in what's really appropriate on the streets.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I come from a kind of contemporary worship point of view. So things like Soul Survivor, Bethel, that's kind of my sweet spot, if you like, in terms of the songs that I play. I am quite intentional about the songs, even within that. So I avoid songs which use language which maybe people don't understand. So things like Holy is the Lord or singing about the blood of Jesus or Jesus being the Lamb of God, things like that maybe don't communicate what we actually want to communicate. There can actually be obstacles because people don't understand what we're singing about. So I try to sing songs which make sense to people. So thinking about God as our Father, us being His children, and singing about the God of God's love and just how He expresses that to us. So that's the contemporary side of things. A few years ago, we started getting a lot of requests for hymns from non-Christians. So people who, didn't have any connection with the church, but maybe, at weddings or funerals had come across these hymns, Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art. So a lot of people were asking for them. So I've started bringing those in as well the last few years. And then thirdly, the last category is spontaneous songs. So thinking about prophetic worship and what is God saying in that moment? Again, just recognizing that on the streets, people are walking by with all sorts of challenges in life, all sorts of hurts and desires. So, what would God say to those people who are walking by in that moment? So, I try to be prayerful as I'm singing the songs. I don't have a set list. I'm trying to listen to God, what He's saying in that moment, while choosing the next song as well. So, we leave room for the spontaneous worship as well.
And do you say anything in between? Do you, what you might call preach, or say anything of a declaratory kind, or of a invitational kind? What would you do in between the songs?
So again, it varies. We don't preach. We occasionally will sing a song and then I might speak off the back of it. So one of the songs that often happens with is No Longer Slaves. And again, picking up that theme of us being children of God, I often just unpack that a little bit afterwards. Something we're experimenting with recently is speaking out scriptures. Again, just thinking about the power of scriptures. So Psalm 23, we're out on the streets yesterday in Sheffield, actually. And I started singing Psalm 23. And I thought, well, let's leave room to speak it out as well. It's a well-known psalm. It's a psalm that most people would know, whether they're Christians or not. So it's something that they can connect with and just a reminder of the characteristics of God being like a shepherd to people.
Now, I appreciate, Aaron, that you may not always see the fruit of what you're doing. People are wandering past God's work in them, but you may never know. But have you seen particular conversations afterwards with people that have encouraged you?
Yeah, definitely. And you're right to say, we don't always know the fruit of what we're doing out on the streets. But we do see some really good things. And it's hard to choose kind of my favorite one, if you like, out of all of them. But I think there is one that really stands out, which I guess symbolizes everything that we want for worship on the streets. It's been my prayer to see this kind of thing happening. And that was a time where we were in Newcastle And we were just in this quiet area of the city centre where people can sit down in a circle, and it's kind of just people go there to have a bit of maybe a lunch break or a bit of a break from the busyness of the city centre. We were worshipping, and at that time I was actually singing a spontaneous song. And I noticed a guy, he was walking towards us, and then he stopped to listen. And after a while, I could see he was actually crying. He was wearing some glasses, but I could see tears coming down his eyes. So I kind of carried on worshiping, and then just as that felt like it was the right time to come to a close, I put down my guitar and just went over to him and just said, "How are you doing? Can I? Is it? Are you okay? Do you need anything? Just want to check in with him, really." And he took off his glasses, and the very first words he said to me was, "Your music is healing my heart." And so I was like, "Tell me more. That's amazing to hear. I'd love to hear what's going on with you." And he basically just shared some of his story. He said he was going through some real tough challenges with the relationship he was in at the time. He'd come to the city for a bit of a break to get away from it all and just to clear his head. And he said as he was walking by, he suddenly heard our music, so wanted to come and listen to what it was. And as he was listening to it, he said it was like the pain was coming up, but then being released, and he was experiencing some sense of peace and healing around the challenges he was facing. And that's what was making him cry. So it was just this beautiful moment of seeing Jesus use the music to reach deep into this guy's heart and into a situation. And we were able to share about Jesus with him and pray with him as well. So yeah, that's one of my favorites.
And so obviously you it's all very well doing this on your own, or with other with a little team, but you've sensed that God wanted you to spread this. And so now, as I said in my introduction, you have a Worship on the Streets hub, you have National Days of Street Worship, you have Worship on the Street tours. How's it worked out in terms of you passing on something of your wisdom in this area to other people?
A lot of this thinking came from my early days of actually being starting street worship. When I started, there was only a couple of people I knew really. So the guys in Durham, who were doing it, but also another guy called Steve Abley, down south in Winchester, he was doing some street worship. But apart from those two, I didn't really know anybody doing it or why I was doing street worship or why they were doing it. So I really felt this lack of community and this lack of theology. So from the early days, I felt like God was saying there's going to be a time where other people are going to be doing this and they need what you're looking for. So for years, I carried this burden of like, how do I equip other people into this ministry? And it started really 2 years ago. As I say, we were in Newcastle around the northeast, but we moved to the Peak District actually 2 years ago. And at that time, in that transition, God was also not just transitioning us practically, but also in the ministry as well. It was very much a time of him saying, now's the time to step back a little bit from this doing the street worship to equip other people to do it themselves. So the first thing I did was connect with other people who were doing street worship and say, would you guys join me in starting a community for people who are starting out in street worship themselves to find a place where they can belong and where they can be equipped in street worship. So that they don't feel that's kind of that aloneness, if you like, and that lack of understanding about why they're doing it. So we've started, the Worship on the Streets Hub is very much a partnership with other street worship ministries. And we meet twice a month online. The first meeting is the second Tuesday of each month, where we gather to pray online and just to remind ourselves that first and foremost, it's about spending time with Jesus. And then the second session is the last Tuesday of the month, which we call our equipping sessions, where we have a space for people to share testimonies and learn from each other. We bring outside speakers in to kind of spur us on, and we look at practical things, whether it's practicalities of doing street worship or how to build a teams and things like that. So have a bit more focus about being equipped in those areas.
So you've mentioned Sheffield, you've mentioned Winchester. Have you heard of other places, towns, cities, where this is now going on a regular basis?
There's quite a few actually. So I'd say Bristol is a real hotspot for street worshippers at the moment. There's four or five different ministries out there doing street worship. There's Oxford. There's lots of people doing it there as well. Scotland, there's a couple of people up there as well. We just recently had someone from Wales joining our community as well. So it's really exciting to see it spring up in different places.
Excellent. Well, we're coming to the end of our conversation, but it's just time to help people to connect with you. So how would, if someone's listening thinking, hey, I'm not really sure, but I'm interested enough to want to connect, what would they do?
Well, the first place to go to would be our website, so worshiponthestreets.co.uk, and there you'll find my email address, You'll find a bit more information about what we're doing on the streets and why we do it. There's some theology things there, some articles and videos of what it looks like. But also, it's got some information about the Worship on the Streets hub as well, and also the National Days of Street Worship, which we run. So there's lots of connection points on the website. If you're on Facebook, go to Facebook. Again, we have a page there, but also we have a group where people can share testimonies and share videos. And that's actually from people around the world, which again, it's exciting to see street worship spring up in different countries as well.
Yeah, well, there may be people listening who are doing this already, but never didn't realize that there are others on the same sort of track. So thank you. Well, Aaron, it's been terrific to chat with you, and bless you for having the courage to step out in the way that you have, and for the way the Lord's led you in all this exciting, refreshing way of serving Him and seeing others come to faith in Him. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks for your time, Andy. It's been great to chat.
That was my conversation with Aaron Shah, Shah, Shah. And the details again of the website worshiponthestreets.co.uk, and they're available on Facebook, so you can obviously do a search for that. Maybe it's something you're interested in, or maybe something you already do and you'd like to connect with Aaron and others who have this kind of ministry. It's great to hear how he responded to the literal vision that God gave him. That's perhaps slightly rare, but hopefully it will inspire you to maybe step out of your comfort zone to follow through an initiative that God has given you. Perhaps something that's you're just wondering if He's doing, and as you take that step, you'll find that voice behind you saying, "This is the way, walk ye in it." Do, as always, find archive recordings of the Leadership Show by going to Premier Plus, the app or the website. Or go to your podcast provider, Apple, Spotify, Podbean, and type in the Leadership Show or the former name Leadership File, and you'll find many hundreds of past shows. So have a search for the topics or the speakers that interest you, and invest in your own leadership. Or if you're not actually a leader yourself, invest in hearing others who are taking initiative in making a change for God where God has placed them. So this is Andy Peck, your host, thanking you for your company. Looking forward very much to you joining us again. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.